Welcome to Better Cybersecurity, the ISF podcast. I'm your host, Steve Durbin.
ISF Chief Executive Steve Durbin is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve speaks with Dustin Dobbin, an internationally recognized security expert, Marine Corps veteran, former SWAT operator, and the CEO of a fast-growing private security and executive protection firm. The two discuss management under pressure, the value of training and preparation, and awareness of supply chain risk. Dustin also makes the case for agility and flexibility in the workplace.
In the cyber world, we talk a lot about threat actors and defensive postures, but rarely do we talk about what it actually feels like to be under fire, not just digitally, but physically and psychologically. My guest today on the podcast is Dustin Dobbin. Dustin doesn't just understand security from a policy and a governance standpoint. He understands it from the front lines. He's a Marine Corps veteran. He's a former SWAT operator, and he's now the CEO of a fast-growing private security and executive protection firm. Dustin has spent his life in high-risk environments. Welcome to the podcast, Dustin.
Hey, thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Now, today we're going to discuss why perseverance is the ultimate security control and how to lead a global enterprise with the same precision and composure that's required in a counter-terrorism unit. And if that hasn't got you all salivating listening to what we're going to be talking about, then I don't know what will. Dustin, you've operated in SWAT environments where seconds count. Now, in a major cyber incident, we often see corporate boards struggle to regain control. How do you go about translating the tactical composure of a SWAT operator into a framework that the C-suite can use to lead under extreme digital pressure?
In my opinion, first and foremost, it starts with preparedness. If you can anticipate something happening before it happens, you're going to be way more prepared. One thing we do on the physical security side is we do what's called imaginal exposure. So what we do is we are constantly thinking about the what ifs. What if this happens? If somebody walks in the door right now, what are we going to do? And you know, cybersecurity should be the same way. What are we going to do if this happens? What can we be prepared for next? Because the threat landscape is both physical and on the technology side is the bad guys are always developing, always trying to get better, and always trying to be one step ahead of us. It's always that race of who can stay on top. And we need to, as security professionals, be one step ahead of the bad guys.
So it's all about preparation, it's all about anticipation, it's about rehearsal as well.
Oh, absolutely. Constantly testing, training, always looking to get better.
It's interesting you say that. I'm quite often asked, one of the things that we've seen at the ISF, a big uptake in probably over the last, 18, 24 months, is these cybersecurity simulation exercises. And I'm very often asked, how often should we be running those sorts of things? I'm curious to get your take on that. How often is often enough?
My opinion, they should be randomized. It should be a test for your team as well. We do that on the physical security side. We'll do random scenarios, penetration testing, things like that, to where only the leadership roles are aware of it. So you can really gauge the response. You can really gauge the performance. And it's good for the leadership to be able to gauge and gather that information to make it better. So, you know, we try to do that quarterly at most contracts, but again, they're randomized. So we might have penetration tests and then a week later have another one, but we try to hit one each quarter at least.
Now, in an industry that for a long time, I'd say been pretty obsessed with preventing attacks, why is it that the psychological resilience of the workforce, that ability to persist through a breach under high stress, is perhaps a more valuable business asset than a perfect firewall, in your opinion?
Much like life, any sort of failures, you can look at them as failures and really beat yourself up about it. Or you can take those failures as a learning experience and how to get better. And if you do that over time, it's going to make you unstoppable and impenetrable. The main thing is it's okay. Little mistakes happen. Everybody's human, even in definitely information security. Same thing. There's always, like I said, the bad guys are always trying to get better, always trying to take down whatever updates and exploit those updates as a benefit to them. So you just got to stay on top of it. You got to keep training and learn from mistakes is the biggest thing.
You mentioned training and this constant refresh a few times already now. I'm just wondering how realistically security teams can actually stay at that sort of peak level of performance. Any sort of insight or guidance that you've got there from your background as to what they can do? What are some of the tricks they can do to always stay at the top of their game?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have so many tools at our disposal now with the advancement in AI and technology. There's all kinds of free courses that are all over. One thing that has made me so successful is prior to joining the Marine Corps, I had an uncle who he was retired out of the Marine Corps. He was a drill instructor, Silver Star recipient, very decorated Marine. And he told me before I left for boot camp, it doesn't matter what it is, volunteer for it, sign up for every training, and take anything that they offer you. So I did that. I did that all through my military, law enforcement, and private security career. Is if you think you know it all, it's time to get out of the business. I'm constantly looking for new trainings to send my team to. I fly people in to teach week-long classes, things like that. And that's really what leadership should be doing in security, is learn from everybody. Just because you have a certificate doesn't mean that you can't go and retake a class or relearn something or learn what's changed since you last earned that certificate or went through that training. That's what I would recommend to every security team out there, is training, training, training.
There's a lot of value as well, isn't there, from mixing the teams up rather than everybody staying in one particular lane, mixing up a little bit, bringing people in with different backgrounds, getting that much more varied perspective on the different things that people are seeing out and about. There's significant value in that, I've found. I wanted to talk to you about this physical and cyber security elements, because we often, quite often, silo physical and cyber, and never the twain shall meet. I'm starting to see now within some of our member organizations, people combining those two things again, which I personally happen to think is a good thing. But I'm interested in your take. Do you think that security is certainly becoming a much more sort of single, unified discipline? And are people perhaps making a mistake by keeping them separate? Just curious to see what you think.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. So when I do consulting for physical security, big corporations here in the United States, what I see a lot is there is that disconnect between SecOps and physical security. And that's one of the first barriers that we break down. And the reason is you work hand in hand. The SecOps guys are ensuring that the network, the cameras, everything are up to date and impenetrable by the bad guys. And the physical security guys are physically protecting servers, the integrity of the facility. And you have to work together. We'll get information from FBI letting us know that someone had tried to penetrate the network, and that puts the physical security guys on high alert as well, because if they're trying to penetrate the network and get in digitally, they're going to try and get in physically as well. So sharing that information and having that open communication with one another is crucial.
I want to turn now to talking to you about supply chain. Obviously, very topical at the moment with all of the activity that's going on in the Middle East, coming off the back of the Ukraine, of course. In a SWAT team, you're only as fast as your slowest member. In a digital supply chain, how can we bring again some of that insight, way of working? So how do we audit the human component in the supply chain, the people and the processes of our third parties, with the same vigor and rigor that you would use perhaps to vet a member of a high-risk tactical unit?
I work with a lot of Delta Force guys, SWAT operators, CIA intelligence operators. And one thing that everybody has in common is situational awareness is one. So if you translate that across any sort of, really any sort of business aspect at any level, the awareness is number one. So you need to stay atop of emerging threats. There's all kinds of forums and boards out there where security professionals are just sharing information. It's a security threat risk assessment should be ongoing. It's not a one and done type thing. New threats emerge based on geopolitical aspects. Like you mentioned, these wars are happening now, which could significantly change the logistics and supply chains. It starts with awareness, situational awareness of whatever your role is. Just master your role and be aware of every threat that's out there and tie in the preparedness, play the what ifs, and just stay ahead, one step ahead.
How do you get some of that intelligence, though, Dustin? I'm just thinking about the sort of traditional way that a lot of organizations have managed their supply chains. They may well have worked quite closely with tier one, tier two. By the time they're getting around to tier three, tier four, they're starting to take people's word for things. They're not actually going out there doing the physical on-sites. We're now moving into a very different environment, right? Where we have to be, to the points you've just been making, so aware from a situational perspective. How can people who are listening to this, who are thinking, yeah, he's making a really good point there, how can they make sure that they're getting some of that really sound on the ground intelligence if they don't already have some of those networks in place?
Yeah, great question, Steve. I have always been the grunt. I'm the guy who's carried the rifle. I'm the guy who's kicked in doors. I've breached doors, things like that. I've always been that guy in this new role of where I do consulting for Fortune 500 companies and above. I really had to sit down and force myself to learn about open source intelligence, intelligence platforms. And what I learned is my company is very successful because we take intelligence first. Knowledge is power. If I'm going to go and set up a physical security site, I'm going to want to know every single thing about that site. So first thing I do is I treat it as if I'm doing a raid in Afghanistan. What kind of safety protocols would I do if I was leading Marines in combat again? From there, I go, okay, now if I was going to hit this building as a SWAT team, what type of things would I look for to make sure my team stays safe and we can execute that mission properly and safely with everybody going home? And then I take in the physical security, everything that I've learned from executive protection schools, look at it from three different angles. I pull as much information, just like as if I was a detective again, and briefing a whole team on a search warrant or the case and setting it up for the prosecutor. I do the same thing on the private security side. And I gather as much information, crime rates, and anything I can get my hands on that are going to be a potential risk or a potential threat to that site, to the client, and then to the security that we're providing. To me, that's what the next level with AI emerging and everything that we're going to be facing here very quickly. Intelligence is number one. And if there's people listening who are thinking about hiring or need a security director or whatever it is for your company, that's something that would be an interview question that I would definitely ask. What do you know about open source intelligence and how do you apply that to your job? Because it is just so important. Intelligence is going to be number one. It's going to be the key. When robots take over and there's no more physical security, intelligence will still have to be there because the bad guys are always, like I said, trying to stay on top, staying one step ahead of us, trying to penetrate new networks. And it's just going to evolve from there. So intelligence is key.
Yeah, I think you make some really good points there because I think for a while, there's always been this tendency for us to perhaps protect against the breach. That's where the focus has been, as I said earlier. But really what you're talking about, I think, is moving us into a much more resilient world where situational awareness is just what you have to do all the time. A number of people have said to me, should we be investing in things like threat intelligence and that kind of thing? And my response has always been, depends how you're going to use it. If all you're going to do is look at threat intel from the perspective of we've got some nice books and research on it, then don't bother. If on the other hand, you're going to use it as a means of trying to increase the resilience of the organization, highlighting how it can contribute to expanding your global reach in a more secure way, then of course you should be investing in it and it should be part of what you're doing from a day job standpoint. And I think that's one of the sort of what I would see as being the more maturing elements of the security industry, but clearly a lot to learn from the physical side in that whole space. Now, you've navigated that transition from military and law enforcement to the C-suite. What perhaps is the one non-technical skill that veterans such as yourself would bring to cybersecurity that the industry is currently failing to utilize effectively, do you think?
Probably the perseverance, the work ethic. Unfortunately, security is one of those jobs where it's 24/7. It never ends. You don't get days off. You don't get nights off. One thing I quickly did when I started this company and things really exploded for us and took off was I stopped worrying about what day it is. And what time it was. I worked until the work was done. And if I got a break, I could take a nap or I could go spend some time with the family. That's what happened. But you have to forget about, oh my gosh, it's Saturday. I wish I was at home and sitting on the couch drinking a cup of coffee. Once you eliminate the aspect of time and the date, the work gets easier. When you really sit down and focus and just do what needs to get done, then once you're done, it's rewarding. A lot of people, they cut themselves off by time. And what happens is when you're on a timeline, people cut corners and they find ways to get the job done quickly, maybe not audit it as much because they're constrained by time. So we're seeing a lot of, especially in the corporate world, for corporate security, is a lot of people working remote on a flex schedule. And we're seeing a lot more productivity because of it. For leadership out there who's listening, absolutely just take that into consideration, as sometimes people work better at certain times of the day based on their schedule. And if you can get them in an environment where they're less stressed, you're going to get better work output out of them.
Yeah, it's about bringing that flexibility and agility into things, isn't it? You know, when you actually need them to be at the top of the game, they actually are.
Absolutely. And you got to be there for them. If they're calling you late at night, answer the phone. You never know what could be happening. Don't blow them off. You got to be there for your team and be there for the people who are building that cohesive team. So be there, be the support role.
Absolutely. As we touched on, of course, that, you know, the world is exceedingly unstable right now. So for companies who've got offices in parts of the world where there's active conflict, what's your advice in terms of managing the safety of those people abroad and maintaining resilient and stable security networks?
Yeah. So if you think about the greatest military generals, it doesn't matter what country or what war, the generals are good at what they do when it comes to planning raids, planning attacks, planning defense, because they have studied prior wars. That is their job. They have studied in-depth, complex attacks, and security should be no different. And we're talking about countries right now who are in turmoil or under very intense threats or risks at the moment. Pay attention to the headlines. Pay attention to the surroundings. Establish that baseline as well. If one day you travel into work and you're the only guy on the road, maybe you should be trying to find out why. And it goes down to everything. Leave no stone unturned. We look at the weather. We look at every headline. Like I said, there's all kinds of programs out there where you can sign up for risk alerts and things like that for physical security and information security. So sign up for everything. And like I said, knowledge is power. Intelligence is what's going to keep you safe. Because if you have the intelligence, you're aware of what's going on and you can prepare for worst case scenario. So we have technology in our pocket. Most of the time it's in our hand all day. Utilize it to your benefit. There's all kinds of programs and things you can use, but watch the news, watch the headlines, watch their surroundings, and knowledge is power. Get as much intelligence as you can.
It's good advice. Dustin, if you were advising a board today on this, say their 5-year resilience roadmap, what's the one lesson from the tactical world that will ensure they're still standing in 2031?
I was in the Marine Corps, and the Marine Corps is pretty notorious for being able to get the job done with as little tools as possible, which I think is good in some aspects, right? You learn the resilience, you learn the perseverance, you learn the importance of being on a team and working together. And all of those are good takeaways. But one thing I've noticed was going through law enforcement and now on the private security side is technology and your tools are rapidly evolving and getting better. And that's key. You got to stay on top of what is the latest and greatest thing and provide your team with that as well. So constantly looking for upgrades and updates and new trainings to stay on top. If you think you know it all and you stay stagnant, we got cameras. They're not the newest cameras, but they work. That type of attitude, you're quickly going to get phased out. Stay on top of it. Stay on top of the technology. Go to conferences, network with other security professionals and talk to them about what they're seeing in the field and learn from other people's mistakes as much as possible.
And it's that real sort of learning, sharing that I suppose is always one of the core founding principles of the ISF. And certainly it's where I think our members tend still to get the most value, just sharing those stories, discussing in safe environments, how they can go about dealing with some of the challenges we've just been talking about today, and really how people are trying to better equip themselves to deal with the challenges of the future. Dustin, it's been great talking to you, particularly getting some of those insights from a very different world for security professionals. But the insights you provided, I think, are as relevant in the information security space as they've ever been. So hopefully people will have taken away a lot of good tips there, particularly around things like situational awareness, intelligence, and the role of people training, constantly keeping them on top of their game. So Dustin, thank you very much indeed for sharing those views.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more expert insights and thought-provoking discussions. But in the meantime, if you really enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast. If you're interested in becoming an ISF member or continuing the conversation further, please do get in touch with me at steve.durbin@securityforum.org, or indeed get hold of me on LinkedIn. And remember, you can explore all our media and resources at our website, securityforum.org.